We'll start with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam asher bachar banu mikol hamim v'natan lanu et torato. Baruch atah Adonai noten haTorah. So today I am sharing a handout with you. It is one that I prepared for a class that I gave at the Jewish Experience yesterday on Yom Kippur. And because they weren't going to have Chumashim or anything in front of them, so I just made all the sources here. So we have the Chumash, we can go to it, but for the most part we'll use this handout here and then you can have it as well. So, it's a custom among many people, not me per se, but among many people, that when they break their fast, before they break their fast on Yom Kippur, they start... let's return. So every people have the custom that when after Yom Kippur, before they break their fast, many people go home and they do the very first step of putting up their sukkah, if they haven't already put up something. Or if they have put up something, they put up a decoration or they do something. And the idea is twofold. One is we have all of this spiritual energy that we hopefully created and received over Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, where we've been sitting energy of thinking and feeling and singing, but we haven't been acting. We haven't put anything, not necessarily anything, we haven't been really putting things into motion. The goal of all spiritual inspiration is to take what we have learned and do something with it. So people have the custom that as soon as they come home, before even breaking a fast, to be have a lot of alacrity, to have a lot of going, jumping into it and doing something. It doesn't mean you spend the rest of the night putting up your sukkah, though some people do. It means doing something to take some sort of an action. This idea of action is what we're going to talk about, and we've spoken about it before, but now I have come across something in the general press, the general culture, and bringing it to dovetail back into Torah and Judaism. And I found it very exciting, and I want to share it with you. And one of the reasons I made the handout is so that you can share it with other people more easily, because I know often, even though I record this class, and it's going to be up on my website, and you can listen to it again. Sometimes you want to share what you've learned, but it's like, I don't exactly remember what she said. It was interesting, hopefully, but I don't remember exactly what it was. So this is what we're going to do. So even though I gave this on Yom Kippur, the truth is it could be any time, though we will use a little bit of a Yom Kippur reference. We're not going to have a conversation about how everybody's fast went, because some people do well and some people do not so well. But most people, unless that's your thing, where you fast, most people did not start off on Tuesday night when they woke up, let's say Tuesday morning, and said, you know what I'd really like to do, what I really feel like doing, is fasting for 27 hours. I feel like not eating, I feel like not drinking, I feel like not brushing my teeth, I feel like not doing anything, I feel like not putting on lotion. Nobody says that. Yom Kippur is an incredibly beautiful opportunity for us to experience our ability to do what we don't feel like doing. Because most of the time, often, unless we have a pressing obligation, we tend to lead our lives when we make small decisions based on what we feel like or what we don't feel like doing. Which is, I don't feel like getting up right now, I don't feel like exercising, I don't feel like choosing the healthy thing on the menu, I don't feel like making the phone call, I don't feel like whatever, or I'm overwhelmed, I can't do it, it's not going to work. Our feelings, which are highly overrated, although the Western culture just thrives on feelings, and feelings are great, but they are not really supposed to be the basis for how we make decisions on what we're supposed to do, because they're not reliable, and they often give us a message that is counter to what we are supposed to actually be doing. They work against us. So Yom Kippur, again, gives us an opportunity to experience a whole day where we do what we don't feel like doing. It's like, I don't feel like doing this, but are we doing it? Yes. Very few people bolted And, you know, went, ran out and, you know, drove away and went and got a Big Mac. People just didn't do that. Now, if somebody was hungry or they're on medicine or whatever your particular situation is, then it's a mitzvah to eat. You have to eat. But otherwise, all these people, all these ordinary people, it was a room full of people doing what they didn't really feel like doing. And yet there they were doing it. It's amazing. Throughout the Jewish world, throughout Jewish times, like, wow, you guys are crazy. And what's funny is people who only come to the synagogue 3 times a year choose that day to come. It's like, why don't you come for Simchas Torah when there's dancing? Then people don't come because, you know, that's for kids. Like, you kind of feel like dancing something, being happy. People feel like being happy usually, but like, oh, no, no, I'm really called to go make myself feel kind of miserable. So this is really an incredible opportunity for us to realize that we have that power, and we're supposed to harness even that power. That's personal inspiration. I can do what I don't feel like doing, which is amazing, for a higher purpose. So, all of us are familiar, I think, or many of us are familiar with Nike's slogan. What's the slogan for Nike?
Just do it.
Just do it. Now, interestingly, now they make exercise gear. I mean, people don't always only wear it for exercise, but that's their primary thing. Their motto is not do it. It's just do it. Why is it just do it and not do it?
Because if you're going to think about it, you're not going to do it.
If you're going to think about it, they are recognizing. Now, they spent millions coming up with this idea, right? They probably sat around, should we call it do it or should we call it just do it? Or that was very, it was very intentional because they know that what they are up against is people's hesitation. That people are like, I don't feel like exercising. So as soon as they're answering our question, they're answering our hesitation by saying, I don't feel like it, and they're saying, just do it. The just is an acknowledgement of the fact that we often are dealing with this hesitation where we don't want to do what we should be doing. Our brains, when our brains experience hesitation, and I'm not a neurologist by any stretch, you know me, I'm not, but I've been reading up a lot of this, and what I'm going to access, and you may have heard of this book already, this came to me, have you heard the 5-second rule? This book, 5-second rule?
Yes, it's fun.
Well, not only is it fun, it is an incredible gift because it is, this came to me, it's by Mel Robbins, M-E-L-R-O-B-B-I-N-S. You can see there's a quote from her on the back page of your, it's already written down on the back of your handout at the bottom of text number 12, where it says excerpted from the 5-second rule by Mel Robbins. So you have it right there. This is an incredible gift, which came to me. I was listening to a class in the kitchen where I often listen to things as I'm cooking and prepping food, washing and checking lettuce, cutting things up, whatever. And I was listening to something, and it was on YouTube. Now, unbeknownst to me, the way YouTube works is if you don't turn it off, it feeds you the next thing.
Yes.
And I didn't know that. So all of a sudden, I thought that what I was listening to was over, and then I hear something else coming on, and it's her. And she's talking about this 5-second rule. And I'm like, what? What? So then I listened to it again. I'm like, that is really interesting. So I listened to it about 3 or 4 times, and then I was telling a friend of mine about it, and she said, oh, I have her book. I'll give it to you. So that's how I got this. But it literally came pouring into my kitchen without my even pursuing it. So I thought, this is amazing. So why is this so amazing? Our tradition is filled with advice and guidance about the necessity to act quickly when we are inspired or when we are supposed to do something. So much so that the Shulchan Aruch, which is the code of Jewish law that has all of the Jewish law that we use for our daily life, all of it. The very first thing, Shulchan Aruch, on this, on page 3 of your handout, which is the top, the first page of the front of the second page, on text 10, the Shulchan Aruch, which was written by Joseph Caro in Tzfat in 1563. So this wasn't this, you know, this isn't yesterday's news. This is going way back, 1563. The Code of Jewish Law, if you look at the excerpt, this is from the Orach Chaim, which is things about everyday, daily living. The first chapter, the very first law, not like, oh, it would be nice. The very first law is one should strengthen himself like a lion to get up in the morning to serve his creator so that it is he who awakens the dawn. Now, we're not talking about what time you get up. It's It's talking about our approach. So if you have your alarm set for, it could be set for 9 o'clock. It means not pushing the snooze button for 9:05. It means getting up at 9 o'clock. And if you have it set for 6 o'clock, it means getting up at 6 o'clock. It says, because this recognition of this powerful message is that if we start the day by not starting the day and getting up and moving forward, we will have lost the day. We already have lost that battle. And you could say, well, I got up at 9:15. It changes the whole thing. So this is a halacha. This is a law that says this is the way you need to start, because if we don't start this way, the day is just going to grab us. It's just going to change. There is in Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, which is even older than the Code of Jewish Law, because that goes back to the 200s, 300s, there is a saying, and this isn't on your sheet, it's in most Pirkei Avot books, it's chapter 5, Mishnah 23, but I have it on my necklace here, and it says, be bold as a leopard, as light as an eagle, as swift as a deer, and as strong as a lion to serve your creator. I'll send you to the Pirkei Avot, and you can also look it up. It's chapter 5, number 23. The essence being that the attitude is using these animals. It's like what to be swift, to be quick, to be light, to not be schlepping around. How we get up, like that when we schlep out of bed, not only are we schlepping, it's not like anybody's seeing us. We're not on Broadway, for example. You know, nobody's like, oh, well, look at how she got out of bed. It is a feedback loop in our own mind that sets a pattern for how we are responding. A sluggish actions create a sluggish mind. Quick actions create a quick mind, an attentive mind. Focused actions create a focused mind. It is the loop. Instead of trying to say, I'm going to wait until I have a focused mind and then I will act in a focused way, it says, don't wait for how you feel. Feelings are the last things that we want to wait for. So these are two of our guidance from Ethics of the Fathers as well as from Halacha. What's interesting is both of them use animals. Because if you think about a lion, have you ever been to the zoo? What do lions mostly do?
Sleep.
Okay? Except if they're hungry and the prey comes by them, the gazelle or the whoever, and they don't say, ugh, I don't feel like getting up. They're like, you know, you snooze, you lose. They're up. When the opportunity comes, there has to be no time left for overthinking, analysis paralysis, because we get into a whole section. So this is what I understand happens in the mind. When our brain senses hesitation, it causes it stress, and so it reacts in a very specific way. If there is something that we're supposed to do, but we hesitate because we don't want to do it, then the brain is like, oh, they don't want to do it? Then I have to be sure that they don't do it. No, this is not a good time. Don't do that. No, this isn't good. You're not going to be able to do that. You don't need to do that. It's going to come up with all the reasons that are going to sound like brilliant, brilliant excuses to you. It's not going to sound like excuses. It's going to sound like brilliant reasons why you shouldn't do it. And if it's something that you want to do but you shouldn't do and you're hesitating, I really want that cake. Oh, but I shouldn't. Your brain is going to, guess what it's going to do? Oh, yes. Yes, you should. You should. And it's going to give you every reason. It's going to give you every reason.
Is that
the Yetzer Hara. Now, we call it the Yetzer Hara, but there is a there's an actual neurological thing. This is not a theological. That's our theological definition of a neurological concept. It's what goes on, and the time is very quick. As soon as we're in the place of being overwhelmed, doubts, fears and desires and feelings, it's like it runs amok. And in a very short time, it will guide us to do what we want to do and not do what we don't want to do. And the decision will be based on that. Unless we intercept that process. And that's where this 5-second rule comes in. So what's the mystery here? She said, it's so ridiculous, it's pathetic. So here's the good news, and the Torah, our sages recognize this, is our minds are smart, but they're not that smart. They fall for being tricked. even if we say, I'm going to trick you. It's not like, oh, well, you told me, so now I won't be tricked. Our minds fall for mind games. And this is a mind game that we're going to play with ourselves. So what's the mind game? It says, when you have even the beginning of a feeling of that you should do something, and we're going to talk about the should do something, you should do something, you should get up to exercise. In the time where the thought comes in your mind and you're starting to hesitate, she says, you have 5 seconds. You have 5 seconds until your excuses are going to kick right in. During those 5 seconds, you want to derail or short circuit your thoughts and feelings and do something else. So what do? You count. Okay? The part of your brain that's involved with counting is not the part of your brain that is involved with how you feel about things. And it's harder to feel things while you're counting because it requires a different focus. Specifically, if you count backwards. Because backwards requires, even though counting 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 is not exactly rocket science, and it's not like counting by threes down from 100. You could do that. That would really get you focused. Think about when people are getting upset and angry. What are they, the most basic thing?
Count to 10.
Why are they telling you to count to 10? It's not just that there will be 10 elapsed seconds and maybe just the time will cool you down. It's when you go into counting mode, you are not in feeling mode. You are reducing feeling. It's also why they say to count sheep if you're having trouble falling asleep. The reason you're having trouble falling asleep is because you can't relax and your mind is moving too much. So if you count and you count backwards, it will help you relax because it takes you into a different part of your brain. Who knew that we could switch our brains so easily? So Mel Robbins got this idea. She was going through a very horrible time in her own life where she really wasn't getting out of bed and depressed and the whole thing. And she saw something on TV. I don't know, it was a rocket launch. Now we're all conditioned, at least in America, that if you hear 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, what's the next word?
Blast off.
See, I didn't have to teach you anything. Blast off. So first of all, it is an action that has a lot of energy to it. If you count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, it's like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Something is supposed to happen. Even counting is an action. It takes us out of feelings, being overwhelmed, doubts, fears. When we go into counting, articulating counting is an action. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get up. She said she saw this launch and she's like, I'm going to blast off tomorrow. That's what I'm going to do. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get up. And she said, I got up. It was a miracle. How did that happen? Then she tried it again like the next day and then she started doing it with some other things that she was like hesitating about doing and I don't feel confident, all these things. She goes, this is really stupid. How can something like this work? Except that it does, and there's like millions of people out there using this strategy. I'm like, wow, that is so amazing. So I was very excited because I read so many different books about motivation, and I have Zelly Pliskin's Life is Now, and I have about enthusiasm and Zerizus and how to take action, and now is the moment. I'm even writing a book, Living in the Present Moment. Okay, so there is, but still I'm stuck. How is it I get overwhelmed just like by the slightest things? She said, and it's the small things.
Yes.
So here is the piece. It says, you know, we spent Yom Kippur confessing all the sins of things, mistakes we've made. That's what we just spent the whole time doing. But there are other mistakes that we've made, which was the things that we didn't do. The call I didn't make, the card I didn't send, the idea that I didn't express, all the things that I didn't do that have kept me from actualizing myself this year because I held back. Why did I hold back? I was scared. I didn't feel like it. It seemed overwhelming. I didn't think it would work. I was overwhelmed with feelings, thoughts, fears, etc. The question is, so we know this, so how do you get past it? So this, since I got this book, I have been using it, and I have to laugh at myself because it's ridiculous. And when I don't use it, then I see myself just like fall right into the trap.
So how do you use it then?
Do it. So let's say getting up to exercise. Okay? All right. So oftentimes I've had this where I'll put on my exercise clothes, but I actually don't go downstairs to the treadmill. guess what? Wearing the clothes doesn't really do anything. Except dirty another outfit that then goes in the wash. So it's like five. So I did this morning, because oftentimes on Thursday I don't exercise because I'm finalizing my preparation for class. I got Steve left early, and he was going to wake me up when he got back from Minion. And I shocked him, because when he came home, I was up and dressed and ready to exercise. He goes, "I thought you were going to be asleep." I said, "Well, I decided to get up." And it was, you know, it was 6:30, and I said, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, get up. And I got up. It was like a miracle. Now, Yom Kippur was long. I was tired. I'm always tired after a fast. I wasn't so pressing. I could have stayed in bed longer. And then we had this illusion that 5 more minutes or 10 more minutes of sleep is somehow miraculously going to be the restorative sleep that you really need 2 more hours of sleep because you're tired or something. Like, it doesn't really work. It's an illusion. Oh, no, just 5 more minutes. That's ridiculous. That is an illusion. It doesn't really do anything. In fact, it can make you more groggy, because if you do fall asleep, you enter a sleep cycle, which is really like 90 minutes long. And so then if you go to get up, you're groggy. You would have been better off getting up when the alarm went off and taking a nap some other time. So all these little strategies, or when getting overwhelmed for Yuntif. I'm like, I have to do all the cooking in the next 2 days. So I started hyperventilating. I'm like, okay, the peaches are ready on the counter. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Just cook the peaches for the cantaloupe peach soup. Just do that. And then actually,